Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, the RTE Rugby Podcast. I'm Michael Corcoran. Later on, we'll be looking ahead to Saturday's final test of the Guinness Series when Ireland play Australia. We'll be joined by the former Irish international hooker Shane Byrne, and we'll also hear from the Australian journalist Jamie Panderan. But first, a snapshot of a highly emotive day at the Aviva Stadium last weekend when Ireland played New Zealand.
Israel Dagg there runs into the arms of Sexton, who prevents him from making it. Back with Aaron Smith, moves it to Kieran Reid. Kieran Reid goes right over the top of the Irish ruck as Ireland tried to gather this one back, but it's New Zealand who have it now, right on the Irish line. On this near side, Yakai Paper is there, back there with Aaron Smith. He's got Liam Squire on the near side, moves it back there now towards Bowden Barrett. A crossfield kick, there's a clattering on the far side of the pitch now. It's gone in towards Monarchy, Fekitoa charges through the Irish cover, 2.5 minutes gone, and you have to wonder where the Irish defence was on that occasion. Gary Ringrose is on. New Zealand gather that now, and they switch position. Here comes Bowden Barrett now, sides through the Irish cover, spots a gap, goes for the line. Bowden Barrett touches it down, and the Irish defence was absolutely parted there on that occasion. But Johnny Sexton is claiming perhaps that the ball had been knocked forward there on that occasion.
I would award a try.
What a joke.
Can you see a clear grounding?
I can see a clear grounding.
So you can see the ball grounded on the grass?
Ooh. Yes.
Thank you. That's a try.
That's unbelievable.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
John Mason of Wales has just said that's a try. That is absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, that is incredible. That was absolutely textbook work by Johnny Sexton. He got underneath it and then tear it off. That TMO was just covering himself because he called it too early.
Absolutely. And Aaron Smith now with Sam Whitelock to his right hand side gets the kick up in the air. That's a poor box kick from Aaron Smith. A couple of Irish fellas underneath that one, and Conor Murray's after gathering it. Available for Heaslip, moves it out tight. Furlong gets it to Josh van der Fleer, to Rory Best, far side to Zeebo, races inside, he's taken out of it, head high, across on the far side of the pitch. The referee's whistle has gone, and he's got to take action here. 8 minutes gone, second half of the game.
Well, if there's not a yellow card here from the referee, the place will absolutely erupt.
Let's have a listen here.
Right around the neck. It's a great attacking position.
Malachi Fetikoa has been sent to the sin bin by the match referee for the high challenge there on Simon Zeebo. You could argue that could have been a red card.
Absolutely. He jumped into it. That wasn't just a high tackle. That was an absolute full jump into it around the neck.
And the use of the forearm as well in the tackle. You can see it in the replay here. There was no attempt to wrap. He went with a short forearm and it could have been and should have been red.
You just wonder, are there laws for the All Blacks and laws for everybody else? Are there two law books?
Listen, we've always known that, for God's sake.
Swept back towards Josh van der Fleer. And Ireland now through Conor Murray. Moves it back to Paddy Jackson with the kick. On the near side, Ben Smith is underneath that one. Had to swivel to gather it and comes on the counter-attack. Gets around the clutches there of Jared Payne, who was left standing, to be perfectly fair about it. And it's available. Perinara moves it out to Israel Dagg. They have numbers. New Zealand, that is. On the near side towards Fetikoa. In towards Bowden Barrett. Bowden Barrett towards Fetikoa on the near side of the pitch. And he has broken through the Irish cover and touched it down. And Malachi Fekitoa with the try for New Zealand, 65 minutes gone, and they have stretched the lead here at the Aviva Stadium.
And again, it comes from a loose kick, a kick just too far for the contestable to be anyway in Ireland's favour, and Ben Smith just took off like a scalded cat, and he caused havoc in midfield, beating tackles, and it got the momentum.
On the far side of the pitch now, New Zealand now come in search of another score coming towards full-time here. The 80 minutes is up as New Zealand lead by 21 points to 9. And that ball is swept out now towards Charlie Fuamuina, and it's moved out on the near side. Maliki Fetekoa pops it back. It's knocked on. The referee's whistle has gone. And in fact, the referee has now blown the full-time whistle here at the Aviva Stadium. And it's New Zealand who are out on their feet. And they know, Ralph Keyes, that they've been in some test match.
Absolutely. And they came here to make sure that they weren't going back empty-handed after what happened 2 weeks ago, but they left everything out there, the All Blacks, and you can see it. The bodies strewn all over, fellas on their hands and knees from the effort on both sides. But New Zealand, well, it's a mark of respect, really. They showed a lot of respect to Ireland by the way they played and went at it.
Well, there were some of the key moments from the Ireland-New Zealand game at the Aviva Stadium last Saturday. Big disappointment from an Irish point of view. Shane Byrne is here in studio with me, and certainly I'm not sure, Shane, if I've ever come across a match in the recent past that there's been such chat about after maybe what happened, what didn't happen, or what could have happened.
Well, no, I think it's what did happen more so. I think, look, the one thing about it, you have to say, New Zealand aren't just physically and skill-wise the best side in the world. They're ruthless as well. They will do whatever it takes to win a game. And I think we saw a very clear episode of that in the game. I think their tackling was there was an anger to it. You know, cynical probably isn't the word for it, but there was an intent. And it was something that we haven't seen from New Zealand in a long time. And it was something that it was almost as if they knew going into it, or they were aware of it during the game, that the ref didn't quite have a grip of the game and the little things that were going on, and they took it to full advantage. They are, you know, they're not just the best in the world, as they start off with. They're not just the best in the world because of the rugby they play, but they don't leave any stone unturned. If they see a weakness in the ref, they will exploit it, and he was weak.
In terms of the number of incidents that were looked at by the sighting commissioner after the game, therefore it shouldn't come as a big surprise.
Incredible, isn't it? Absolutely.
I don't think I've ever seen that many.
Yeah, ever. And for it to be only one with the Irish, which is, look, okay, that's good, you know, that it is that. But the simple fact is that I don't think New Zealand have had stats like that before. If it is, I don't remember it. And between, you know, normal game, amount of penalties that they conceded, the yellow cards, the amount of things, as you said, been referred to by the sighting commission. It just paints a picture of you know, a side that we're under pressure and just we're going to win at all costs. You know, I go out on a limb with it saying it. You know, the first instance, the Kane incident, I honestly haven't looked at it. Probably don't consider it a penalty at all. I can understand what people are saying, no doubt, but I think Kane was on his way down to make a correct legal tackle, and Henshaw turned into him. So move on past that. The tackle on Zeebo was a straight red card. That was it. And the ref should have had his head around it to do that. There were other instances that were missed completely. Obviously the sighting commissioner did it, but they never got to see the light of day as far as charges were concerned. But it was something that you don't want to see in the game, that the first team in the world, and have been for a long time, need to resort to that kind of stuff.
Did you feel that the match referee didn't have control of the game right from the very, very beginning? Because I always feel that you get one chance to take charge, and if you don't take that chance, well, teams spot that.
But now, to go exactly by what you said, from the first second of the game, the kickoff, you know, that was the kickoff, that was a penalty. Like Sean O'Brien, CJ Stander was hit, and Sean O'Brien was dropped from a height, and that was, you can't do that. That's a penalty. You have to, everything in rugby, so much about it, there's a few untouchable rules, but you have to protect the man in the air. And that's whether he's been lifted or he's jumping. And he was just taken out. And that was the end of the story. The whistle should have been blown straight away. Authority stamped on the game. The New Zealanders realised that the ref is on the ball on this one. And whatever plans they had, just get left to the side. But that didn't happen. And they just kept going with this momentum that they had.
People, I mean, my own view of this is that there are two areas here. One is the result of the match, which nobody's
complaining about it, let's be honest.
No, I don't think we were going to win it, but I think the Irish effort deserved to be a one-point or a two-point game. I don't think it deserved the scoreline that it had.
Particularly with the last try and maybe the try scorer from the last try. Maybe that's you know. I don't think anybody's complaining about the result of the game. What people are complaining about is how it was patrolled in terms of by the match officials.
But look, the two obvious ones, the simple fact that the TMO, like, that was an absolute thundering disgrace. And for, you know, a reason that they have so much now to work on and so much things that they could look at where he could have easily rolled back in his decision. But everybody knows he called it too early because he only saw one angle and he said, yeah, that's definitely a try. And in fairness to him, it did look like a try until you flipped around to the other angle and you saw the effort that Sexton had put in. It wasn't a try. You know, you could argue there's a slight little bit, but I don't think so. I don't think that that was a try. And he wouldn't back down on it. But ultimately, it comes down to the ref. The ref can go, I don't agree with you. That's not a try. I can see it here because you could hear it in his voice. You can definitely see that hit the ground because nobody could. And the crowd, which I have to say, were amazing on the day. The atmosphere there right from the off was fantastic. And the things that upset them really helped keep them in the game because they were watching absolutely every single thing that happened. And then for the forward pass for the final try, and the simple fact, listen, there's the myriad technology there. Why not just look? And I think Best said it best, you know, excusing the pun, that it's too important not to look at it. And he just dismissed that. Now, in fairness, Best took a bit of time getting out to him. He could have got out there a bit earlier. But I genuinely think, because he was behind the play, as most players were, and I think someone had to say it to him, and then he had to look at the screen before he went over to him. But, you know.
Did we see a key learning, if I can call it that, out of last week, just in terms of officialdom? Better communication, maybe more experienced officials, people not afraid to have a look in terms of a big screen, because I mean, if the technology is there, kind of why not use it? It's free. You don't have to pay a charge every time you go, you know, maybe not for every single incident, but certainly for key ones, you know, the last try. I mean, even, you know, what may be left a sour taste, the last try scored by a player who perhaps shouldn't have, you know, as we discover now, shouldn't have been on the pitch in the first place.
Yeah, agreed. But that's it. Look, rugby is, and Jamie Heaslip talked about it, that it's a rough game, you know, and we're all prepared for that. We're all okay with that. But the one thing that rugby players need is we need the protection by the officials under the rules of the game. You know, we need them to be, you know, controlling the game because the rules are set that we can play it at the ultra physicality that is played at, but that it's within a set of rules which will keep the players safe. And when things start to slip, okay, I know we're talking about tries and TMOs and things like that, but it's just the overall picture, is that we need to know that these referees, if they don't do it, are taken to account. You know, he's, I think, reffing England.
Australia.
Yeah. He shouldn't be reffing that game. Do you know what I mean? Because there has to be a repercussion. Players have to think that they feel the same, that these guys, there is a consequence. If they have a bad game, if that TMO, you know, he's not going to be a TMO for another big game. He's dropped down a few rungs and he has to go work his way back up, or the ref. Because that's the second time. Like over in Paris last season, you know, there was a myriad of things he was missing. And like all day, I know there's two or three major incidences that we're seeing, but he didn't ref the offside line at all, it seemed. And that's not right. Players need to know that the structure of the game has been there and it's been controlled by a man who is in control. Nigel Owens would have looked at that pass. I know he's been rated as, you know, he's far from infallible, as no ref is, but you'd be damn sure he would have looked at that and he would have made his own mind up.
Should there be a step back system for referees and officials, touch judges, television match officials, like there is for concussion? So if a referee has a bad day or an official has a bad day, that there is a return to play protocol for them, that they have to step back and go to the lower league, if you understand what I mean, and then come to, you know, whether it's a domestic league match, then a European game, before they start doing an international game again. Because if they're doing the same stuff repeatedly, you know, what's the consequence?
Correct. Because there would be a consequence if they're missing things. You know, that's the point. Is that if they're not keeping the players safe on the pitch by making sure the game is reffed within the rules, something could happen. And yeah, I think something like, you know, the cumulative points that you do, the ranking, the seeding of the, where we've, luckily enough, we're climbing the ranks in the world seeding. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that they should have, is that if they have a bad game and the ref is such that they do drop down the ranks, because that would also give confidence to the players as well, is that they know that there is repercussion, that this isn't just going to be swept under, that they, someone is going to sit them down and watch that game and go, what were you thinking there? And they go, well, because you're missing that, you're going down to whatever you're going down to level, and then you have a couple of good games there, you're right back up. But there is a consequence.
All right, interesting thoughts there from Shane. We'll hear from him a little bit later on. Michael Checa is back on familiar territory this week, his second visit to Dublin as the Australia head coach. His side unbeaten so far on tour, with wins over Scotland, Wales and France. He welcomes back more than 300 test caps of experience for the game against Ireland on Saturday. Israel Folau and Michael Hooper headline six players who are back in the starting 15 after sitting out last weekend's 25 points to 23 victory over France in Paris. Stephen Moore returns to the number two jersey, and in doing so joins Adam Ashley Cooper and Nathan Sharp as the equal second most capped Wallaby players in history, with his 116th test appearance in the gold jersey. Dean Mum comes into the back row alongside Michael Hooper and David Pocock. Well, the Australia head coach, Michael Checa, has been chatting to Gary Moran.
This year we were, you know, we obviously made a decision to, you know, change our team and bring a lot of new faces in. And we were confronted with, you know, a calendar that already had 15 test matches against the top eight nations. So it was a big curve for a lot of the lads, and some new training techniques and some new ideas about how we want to play. And I think that, yeah, early on in the year, we're obviously under a little heat as well from losing matches, but I think we showed a fair bit of resilience there. And slowly but surely, this tour in particular at the end of it is something that will really help form our players going forward. You know, no matter what happens, you know, wins, losses, draws, just the experience of playing over here, and you know, being in the hostile environments of European stadia, and then just the 5 weeks, five test matches, she's tough, you know. And we threw a midweek game in there as well, just to test us out totally. And I can see where the guys are getting benefit from it, you know. And it's very much a big week in for us within that, because this week here is where, you know, you're getting close, and you want to just keep converting. So you've got to keep your mind focused on the next thing, which is tomorrow, and then we'll look at Saturday when that rolls around.
Of the three test matches in Europe so far, then, you were very dominant in the first half against Wales. You could say won relatively easily, very close against Scotland, then a much changed team, more inexperienced team against France. Which one would have given you the most satisfaction?
I think all of them. You know, it's hard to single one out. Obviously, I was pretty happy last week because, you know, I think, I pretty much called it that we put our second team out, you know, so that's always pleasing, you know. But you can't get caught up too much in that emotion. I think all of the games, for different reasons, have pleased me and have disappointed me in different parts as well. So, and what we got to start doing is probably playing a little bit more consistently. I think of the three games, the French game is probably where we were most consistent in what we did. So I'd like to bring a combination of all those games and be a little bit more consistent on Saturday.
Well, a lot of changes now from the French match. We said that was the inexperienced selection, relatively speaking. So why did you make the changes he did for this week? Is it just in the context of a 5-week tour? It's fair to say it's more back to your more closer to your first choice selection, is it?
Yeah, obviously, you know, in the middle of the 5 weeks. Oh, sorry, not really from a physical point of view, more from wanting to give other guys opportunities. That means now everyone in this middle 2 weeks of the tour are playing two games, definitely either this game or the one in Bordeaux tonight, plus the game last weekend, and the other guys have played games. So everyone's involved, and I think that that's really important. When I've been on tours, maybe some guys don't get to be involved as much, and everyone's got a part to play and a role to play, and everyone understands that role, and that's now shown us that there's some other players too that can compete at the top level. So it makes competition for places ring true. Definitely, you know, for the next game, this is an opportunity for this team now to show what they've got.
I presume you've watched some or all of the two Irish test matches against New Zealand. What did you make of those, and what are Ireland's strongest attributes in your view?
Yeah, I think they've got they played very well in the two games, you know. I think their intensity, probably in the first game, blew New Zealand away, you know, and they brought a very high intensity. It didn't matter who was playing, you know, so they had all types of players out there, and they played with a lot of intensity. And then I think, obviously, they're very well drilled, very well organised team. They've got, obviously, that X factor in attack on, you know, in their back row and on the edges. And then also the X factor in defence with their hold-up defence, you know what I mean? It can give. We've got some big, tall blokes, so I'm sure they'll be targeting those guys. So they've got, and they're very consistent, I feel. So you know they're going to bring something, you know, at that level, you know, from what they've been producing against New Zealand in those last few weeks. So you know they're going to bring something like that level. So, you know, they're beating the world champions who we've lost to 3 times this year. You know you're going to be in for a tough one.
And a final question, like, there's a lot more test rugby played now than there was 30 plus years ago when Australia did a sweep of the home nations in 1984. Does it really matter that you do a sweep here, or is it just game by game and it's not particularly hung on one result?
For us, each day is, you know, we got to make something happen. But in the bigger picture as well, you know, obviously that's a historic day when we won the Grand Slam in Australia before. So, and everyone refers back to that point. And our focus is purely on this game, because it's akin to a semi-final, you know, knockout semi-final for us. So it doesn't mean it's different. It's just the order of the games are in, you know. So without this game, we sort of don't have... We don't have what, you know, anything that we want. So it's the most important game on the tour, and I want the lads to enjoy it as well. I want them to enjoy that atmosphere and those things, because that'll get them ready for more tournament play, which will come later on in our careers.
Well, that's the Australia coach Michael Checker there chatting to Gary Moran. There are 4 changes to the Ireland team from the team that started last weekend's game against New Zealand. Gary Ringrose and Paddy Jackson start in place of the injured Robbie Henshaw and Johnny Sexton, while Keith Earls comes in on the left wing and Ian Henderson starts in the second row. I've been chatting to the Ireland coach Joe Schmidt.
It's Australia this week. How important is it, or how much of a challenge has it been to get last week out of your system collectively as a group in terms of preparing for this week?
Well, there are some individuals who won't get it out of their system, unfortunately, so we're going to be shorn of a few players. Obviously, Robbie Henshaw still hasn't recovered from the injury he copped, and Jonathan Sexton won't be back in, and you know, that means that we're going to have to reshuffle a little bit. But it means with Paddy Jackson and Gary Ringrose, who both replaced those two players, hopefully we get a little bit of continuity from that, and hopefully a little bit of improvement. We just were a little bit hampered in trying to prepare for that, because we had a light run on Tuesday, and then we trained pretty well today. So that hopefully will be enough of a springboard to launch us into Saturday with a little bit of confidence and cohesion.
Does it make you even more anxious, if you understand what I mean, given the fact that perhaps your preparation hasn't been as coherent as it could have been, you know, because there was uncertainty about a number of players?
Yeah, I'm pretty anxious by nature, Corky, so I'm always kind of having a bit of anxiety about what might and might not happen, who might do what and why and when. But I think at this end of the week, once you've had that Thursday training, that the lads will run themselves and a light run tomorrow, and hopefully that will just cap off sufficient preparation for them to put something together tomorrow. And I'd love it to be a really special occasion and finish off with a win, because I think, you know, there's been a number of things that have made things difficult over the last 4 weeks, really. You know, a little bit of travel that we wouldn't normally have done. Now, I don't begrudge that, because it was a fantastic occasion in Chicago, but it's just been a little bit more than a challenge, more of a challenge than it normally is during the Guinness series.
How much, not in terms of the challenge, but I mean, where's the energy level right now, given the fact that you're coming to match four of a four-game scenario?
Yeah, there was endeavour today, but not quite that real contagious energy that you tend to get on a Thursday. But we've got 48 hours before the match, and it'll now be just a case of trying to build a little bit more energy into the captain's run. Normally that's, you know, we keep that pretty quiet and pretty short intentionally, but I think the players will look for a little bit of a boost during the captain's run, and hopefully that will give us that little bit of a springboard that we're looking for into Saturday evening's game.
You're against a team who were beaten just 12 months ago in a final of a Rugby World Cup. I mean, they're one of the top teams in the world.
Yeah, they are. And, well, they've got a few changes. They've got a lot of consistency as well. And I think some of the guys who've come in have probably, you know, outpointed some of the guys who were there previous. I think Reece Hodge has really grown into their 12 jersey. And, you know, they've got some of the same guys there, with some of their big players, with Pocock, Hooper, Steve Moore is still there with 115 caps, leading from the front and out the back. Guys like Israel Folau, Tavita Kurandrani is still there, Spate and Haleb Petty has come in new, but he's brought a real energy that perhaps Adam Ashley Cooper, as much class as he had, was probably starting to wane a little bit after having been in the forefront of Wallaby performances for so long.
Is it fair to say that the breakdown would be rather interesting between both teams? I mean, if you look at fellows who are wearing jerseys 6, 7, and 8 on both sides.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a torrid time. I think Jerome Garcia is probably kind of scratching his head at the moment, wondering quite how he's going to get some solutions when players go at the ball in those post-tackle situations. But, you know, I think, you know, with both sides having people who are good at it, you know, hopefully the ball will be there and gone so quickly that the game keeps a bit of tempo and a bit of shape, and people get to see a good spectacle, and hopefully we can be on the right side of the end result of that.
In terms of your captain, Rory Best, it's the 100th cap for him. I mean, to play once for your country is brilliant. To do it 100 times says a lot about it. For.
Yeah, well, there's a bit that's been said probably, but you know, my impression of Rory, and I work closely with him now, obviously, and have since I've come into this team. I always found him a pain in the neck, to be honest. When he was in the Ulster team, he didn't know how to take a backward step. He very seldom showed that he was feeling the pressure, and it made it difficult. So we had some ding-dong head-to-heads at that stage. But ever since I've been involved in this environment, he's been part of the leadership group anyway. So it wasn't a massive transition for him to move from a lieutenant to a captain. Mm. And he's done both jobs incredibly well. And he's done both jobs in a very probably low-key manner, as far as his vocal involvement, but he has been incredibly important to us in his physical contributions, his ability at the scrum, his accuracy at the line out. I thought last weekend was super. There were some very fine margins with Reed going up and Retallick and Sam Whitelock back in the fold. It was very tight, some of those windows, to get those throws on the money. He nailed those. And then, you know, there's a couple of times where you just wouldn't have wanted to carry the ball. There's a wall of All Blacks in front of you, looking to get the best physical contact they could, and Bestie puts his hand up and carries the ball. So, you know, there's a lot to admire about the man, and hopefully he gets a really positive experience in his 100th cap.
And just before I let you go, I mean, are there key learnings that you've taken from the last couple of weeks, maybe even last Saturday principally, you know, that you're going to learn from moving forward, even as early as this weekend?
You hope to. You hope to take key learnings week to week and you know, implement small changes or help an individual develop a little bit more as a player. And, you know, the unfortunate thing in an international window is, you know, like this week we've had 1.5 trainings, really. It's not like you're going to change something technically or, you know, grow someone's game immeasurably in the space of 1.5 trainings. But it's really just giving them a little bit of advice, giving them a little bit of feedback on, you know, some of the things the team need from them and some of the things individually they can do better. So we've had a fantastic opportunity to look at a real breadth of players, you know, and that will hopefully allow us to build that base that we're looking to have, because, you know, again, this week it's evident we need it. We're missing three key players from the spine of our team, and, you know, the guys who step in and take their place, they're going to have to step up and play incredibly well to be as competitive as we can be with the Wallabies.
Well, you heard there from both coaches, Michael Checa and Joe Schmidt, ahead of Saturday's game, Ireland against Australia at the Aviva Stadium. Well, Shane Byrne has rejoined me here to have a chat about the game, talk about the, you know, the two teams that were selected earlier today. And I'm delighted to be joined on the phone by the rugby writer from the Daily Telegraph in Australia, Jamie Pandurham. Hiya, Jamie.
Yeah, very well. How are you, mate?
I'm not too bad, mate. Listen to me, this tour, from an Australia point of view, I mean, Australia unbeaten, that obviously must keep Michael Checa pretty happy.
Yeah, well, after the start that Australia had this year, not a lot of people would have foreseen 3-0 on this spring tour. They lost their first five tests, you know, a couple of them quite comprehensively, and there was a lot of panic, a lot of scratching of heads after they'd managed to make it all the way through to the World Cup final. And there has been a blooding of a lot of new players since then. So this is, they constantly refer to this as a transition year. They've had 13 debutants play for Australia this year, a few of them on this tour and at the back end of the Rugby Championship. So there's been a sort of cleaning out. You know, we saw a lot of the veterans come back for that World Cup campaign, Matt Gitto, Drew Mitchell. And this is really, I guess, the start of the process to build for the next World Cup. And we've seen a lot of young players come through, guys that have been around the fringes get a chance. You know, people like Lapeti Tamani, who has you know, really come on during this tour, and you know, Reece Hodge, who only debuted in Super Rugby this year, is now the starting number 12 and playing very well. Dane Howlett-Petty as well on the wing. So there's been a transition. It was a rough start, but yeah, I've been quite impressed with what they've done on this tour. Not just the results, but the way they've played. Because as we saw at the back end of last year, they were playing that very attractive up tempo style that Checa loves to coach, and it just wasn't working for them in England. And then early on against the All Blacks, they were trying to do the same things, but they just didn't have enough potency in attack. And I think that the balance they've got now with Bernard Foley at 10 and Reece Hodge at 12 really suits the way they play. And then they've found some running in the legs from some of their forwards. And I think those two have been the key factors for what's transpired so far.
I would refer you back maybe to the game against France at the Stade de France last week. Now, you know, any team that beats France in their home stadium has to be a good team. And that was almost a Wallaby B team, if I can, you know, with respect to the people who played, yeah. You know, given the rotation that Michael Checa had last weekend.
Well, that's right. And they planned that going into the tour. They knew that they couldn't really play their top guys for five tests in 5 weeks. Players like Israel Folau, Michael Hooper, Sakopi Kepi, they've been playing a lot of minutes. You know, Hooper and Folau, nearly all the minutes for every test this year. And this is going to be their 14th test this year. So it's been a big, long season coming off the back of Super Rugby as well. And you know, not a lot of downtime after last year's World Cup. So they had to go into this tour with that mindset that at some stage they were going to have to rest some of their big guns. And that game doesn't affect their Grand Slam chances. So it was a game where they could afford to gamble, but also give other guys a look in. So it was quite an impressive display, especially because their scrum wasn't going so well, but they just found a way to win. And they did that against Scotland too. So we've seen two quite gritty performances and then them being able to come up with answers that they weren't able to come up with 5 months ago. So there's a lot of development going on within the team and a lot of trust built back up, because when you lose 3, 4, 5 tests in a row, you know, a lot of players can start asking questions about coaching tactics and selections and stuff like that, and it all fall apart very quickly. They've somehow managed to rejig themselves, realign themselves, and then make a tilt on this tour. Now, obviously, the two toughest games are the ones coming up in the next 10 days against Ireland and England, so, you know, we'll know a lot more about where they sit. But, for inexperienced guys like Luke Morihan, who was only playing his third test and, you know, first in about 4 years, and Kyle Godwin making his test debut, you know, Tolu Latu starting at hooker, that's a big test, you know, at Stade de France against, a fired-up French outfit. Yeah. So they would have learnt a lot about themselves and Cheka knows a lot about the qualities of these young players that he's trying to bring through now.
Now, when I look at the team that he has selected for the game on Saturday, I mean, you know, the front row, Scott Seo, Stephen Moore and Sakopi Kepu, I mean, that to me is first choice. And then it's kind of backbone. Yep. There's a massively strong spine all the way through. Simmons, Dean Mum, Michael Hooper, David Parker, wonderful back row. Will Guinea, Bernard Foley, you know, between them, what, over 110 tests between the two of them. I mean, he's actually developing and bringing through a very accomplished side this year after a pretty shaky start. I mean, they're only, when I look at Rory Arnold, what, 8 tests, Henry Spate and Rhys Hodges, he said,
yes,
still only 8 tests for them, but they're surrounded by a sort of a blanket of very experienced players.
Yeah, so the problem for Australia in the last few years has been the lack of depth. And it's probably, for most countries outside of New Zealand, when you lose your frontline starting players, the guys coming in behind them have just been not up to that standard of quality. And this has been a real focus for Cheka this year, is to build enough depth. A guy like Arnold, who wasn't even starting for the Brumbies at times during Super Rugby, has been transformed. He is a very powerful weapon in that tight five now for Australia. And Adam Coleman the same before he got injured in that Wales game. And they've added new dimensions to that team. So what we've got is, this is the best team that they could name. Mum coming in at 6. Now, that's very tactical in terms of how they want to disrupt Ireland's lineout. So he's replaced Lapetti Tamanu, who had been starting in the back row. And I imagine that's going to sort of, that will chop and change, but you've got the element of Hooper and Pocock in that back row. You can see the frontline team is a very strong team, and what needs to happen now is that those guys underneath, the guys on the reserves bench, need to be able to step in at any moment and fill that role equally as well. And once that starts to happen, then Australia can be a very, very good side.
If I could just jump in there, Shane Byrne here, the scrum issues that been having, do you think it's going to continue being an issue? Like, you obviously have such strengths. You mentioned earlier on, I would agree completely with you with the Foley-Hodge partnership there that's working out. Obviously, your back row is, you know, a fantastic, even with Munn coming in, that it is a fantastic back row. But the scrum is an issue.
Yeah.
And obviously, everyone you play, you're mentioning the next 10 days is very important. Both sides will be wanting to have a crack at that scrum.
There's no doubt. I mean, and with Australia's reputation in the scrum, every team should be targeting it, because there have been so many instances over the last 10, 11 years where the Wallaby scrum has just fallen apart. So it has been an Achilles heel. I've been quite impressed with the way they've handled some tough moments, particularly, you know, we knew England were coming to Australia to target the scrum. They had some success, but Australia had their moments as well. They also had their moments against the All Blacks. What we saw last weekend against France was a worry because, again, we were talking about an inexperienced front row, but they did struggle and they lost some key possession on the back of that. But Australia's always going to have difficulty in that area because, as the scrum coach Mario Ledesma keeps telling us, Northern Hemisphere props are born to love scrummaging. And that it's almost been a foreign concept for Australian props who are almost brought up to engage and then move on straight away so that the ball can be in play. It's just been a different mentality, a different style of playing. Ledesma's been brought in by Cheka to basically instill that love of scrummaging. To love it if you're scrummaging for 30 or 40 seconds. And it's something that Australia hasn't quite grasped in the past. I still see that as a potential weakness. I don't see that Australia is as strong in that department as Ireland, England, France. You know, the developing depth that they're trying to improve. But at this point in time, that's certainly an area that that both those teams can exploit over the next 2 weeks.
And do you think the game plan is adjusting around that? Like, in fairness, it's been a problem for a while. You're dead right saying that. And no better man than Ledesma. He was a fair scrummager himself. But, you know, do you think the game plan completely adjusts around it? Because, you know, the form that you've been in the last few weeks has definitely been showing that, like, regardless of what the scrums are going to do, we're still going to play our game plan. We're going to get the phases rumbling through. Do you think, you know, it's very definitely going, okay, we're not going to be too strong here, but we just got to get that ball going out of it?
Well, I mean, they're trying to improve in that area, but let's face it, they are just so much more dangerous when the ball is in play. So it doesn't really suit them to have, you know, three scrum resets, you know, over 5 minutes.
Yeah.
They would much rather get that ball out quickly, give it to guys like Folau and Kurundrani and tear teams up, you know, on the outside defence. So the way that Australia are trying to play at the moment is very much, you know, ball in hand. You don't see a lot of kicking, a little bit from inside their 22, but they want to keep possession. They're more than happy if they're holding 70-80% possession in a game, because that means that they're playing the way they want to. So I don't expect you'll ever see in the near future the Wallabies trying to change that style for a more conservative game plan that revolves around being, you know, dominant in the scrum. Chequers, he made a complaint last week at the press conference after the France game in terms of how his scrum is being refereed. He believes that the instructions given at the start of the year for how the every team is supposed to scrum, he says that the instruction is every team is supposed to scrummage straight, and yet other teams are scrummaging in from the side, and the Wallabies are paying the price for that. There's always going to be these technical debates about what's right and wrong and who should take the blame for whatever. The history shows that Australia has always struggled in that area, particularly against Northern Hemisphere teams. So, yeah, I mean, they've got a game plan. It doesn't really work for them to be scrummaging for a whole amount of time. Get the ball out as quick as they can and let their flashy backs do the work, you know. So, yeah, I don't think that'll change over the next 3 or 4 years under Cheka's reign, because they will be going to the 2019 World Cup planning to be the best attacking side in the competition and planning to be the most potent try-scoring threat in the competition, and that's how they'll plan to win the tournament.
Jamie, we're going to move on for a second. I'm shocked that Michael Cheka was complaining at a press conference. I that's totally out of character, I have to say. Listen, I don't...
it was a shock to me.
I know, mate. Listen to me. I don't know if you've seen any of the Irish performances, but certainly, I mean, even the headline news back in the country you come from, Ireland must have made headlines when they turned over the Twin Islands of New Zealand in Chicago a couple of weeks ago.
It was huge news. You know, it was really well received as well in just a year of drought breaks. There have been a number of extraordinary results in the 2016 sporting calendar, and that just... that was almost as good as any of the others. I mean, you know, I watched the 2013 loss. I was touring here as well then, and I watched that in a pub in Cardiff, and that was one of the most heartbreaking finishes I've ever seen, and I really felt sorry for Ireland after Cruden kicked that second conversion after the full-time whistle. And I just thought at that point, you know, maybe this is never going to happen. But I guess that shows the not only the resilience of Ireland, but the fact that they were close a couple of years ago and then they got the job done. So they are a team that has been building, and they have excellent qualities. And even the way that they pushed the All Blacks last week, I know they didn't score any tries, but they played quite well. That to me is a sign of a team that is there, up right there with the best, and can deliver some big performances. So yeah, I guess you know, the Chicago result, that will stand on its own because it's so historic. But I think there's just good signs for Irish rugby all around. You know, you've got some players there, and obviously a very talented coach who can pull out some big results when it matters. So I guess that should fill you guys with a bit of confidence heading into the next sort of 3 or 4 years. It's going to be about, you know, whether they can sustain that consistency, because that's been the problem for, I guess, every team aside from the All Blacks.
And just before we let you go, Jamie, in relation to the game at the weekend, you know, with your objective hat on here, as I try to wear mine as well, I mean, what sort of a game are you expecting? I mean, certainly we know, and we've discussed the scrum, people will see that as an Achilles heel far from an Australian point of view, but Michael Checker will want his team to play at a pretty high tempo.
Yeah, they're not going to change the way they've been playing and the way they've been training. Very high speed, a lot of intricate running lines and short passing. So that will be all dependent on the possession that they can retain. So the line out and the scrum are going to be the keys here, because both sides are going to want the ball. The other factor is, you know, Ireland's had a lot of success against Australia with the holding off the ground, you know, the hold up tackles, and I expect that's going to be something that they'll try again. That will mean the Wallabies will have to really commit to the contact area and at the breakdown to get these guys off them. So, I just think Australia might just pull this off because not only of the way that they've been attacking and everything sort of coming together, but also I feel as though Ireland has had something taken out of the tank with these two games against the All Blacks. It's been a massive, massive 3 weeks, and that game last weekend was just so bruising. You know, guys have lost a couple already out of that, and that sort of that may just swing things in the Wallabies' favour. But again, like we've had in the last couple of games, you know, a 1-point win, a 2-point win, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same sort of situation this weekend.
All right, listen, Jamie, we're going to let you go for now. Shane Byrne remaining with me. Jamie Pandaram from the Daily Telegraph. Keep writing the good articles, and we'll see you at the weekend, mate.
All right. Cheers, guys. Bye.
Yeah, thanks indeed, Jamie. It's an interesting point, actually, there, Shane, that Jamie makes, just in terms of Ireland and the tank and what's left in it. And maybe that's an area that hasn't been touched on by many people during the course of this week.
You know what? There's no doubt that over the past couple of weeks, there's been a high attrition rate there. But I think it's instilling a belief in the Irish side. There's two things. I would say if Joe Smith was when he was planning out these four games, I doubt if he thought he would have had such a familiar look on three of the four games. I think he would have expected to rotate his squad a bit more. But the pressure is a little bit on us now, in the sense that we've made strides in these couple of games. These two games against New Zealand, we have made major, major strides. And we need to win this game. We have to win this game. That's the way I look at it, to keep that momentum going, because it took the best team in the world with their best defence in the world to keep us at bay the other day. And regardless of what way you look at the tries or whatever, or the scoreline. But it was necessary. And when we come up against somebody that, you know, should be a step down, we should keep our performance up around there. Any issues that I think that is there with fatigue or anything like that, I think is matched with the hunger of the young lads coming in. I think particularly our bench, you know, you still have a lot of guys there who, if there is tired legs, which there probably will, there's going to be an amazing input from them, which has been exactly what we've wanted in the game so far. And I think that they would re-energise the side. And you have Keith Earls coming into the side on the wing. He is chomping at the bit. You know, he would have been one of those guys very disappointed that this is the first chance he's had to have a go at it. Gary Ringrose raised a few eyebrows that he's keeping him at 12, but I don't think he did anything wrong. And I think the fact that, you know, he just is one of those kids that has grown up beating these sides at under 20 level and stuff like that, and he's no fear. He's not going to be worn out by anything that's going on there. And, you know, so for God's sake, you go through the team all the way. CJ Stander's going to be, you know, he feel he missed 60 minutes of rugby that he could have had a major, major influence on. I think he's dead right that probably psychologically there was big, big highs, but that's what Joe has to do now. He has to make sure that they're still up for this game, that, yes, you had a great job. You did it once. You put in a great effort the second time against New Zealand, but you're playing against still one of the best sides in the world. You have to maintain that level that we played.
And there is the opportunity this Saturday for Ireland to record a victory over the third team from the Southern Hemisphere. I mean, if you look at the last couple of months, a first ever victory in South Africa against South Africa, a victory against New Zealand and Chicago, and you know, the third team from that part of the world are Australia.
Now, you're going to have to check the stats on this, but I think I'm right in saying that this is, if it's done, it's only the second time ever any side has beaten the three, any Northern Hemisphere side has beaten the three major sides in the calendar year, which would be, it's some hell of achievement. It really is. But it's on the cards. Like, there's I'm not saying it's likely, and I'm weary saying that, you know, that I'm not saying it should or will happen, but it's, I think we've got to, you know, very definitely qualify that by going, Australia are good. You know, yes, they've had two very tight wins, but they have wins. They're an amazing attacking side. They do have their weaknesses. They have apparent weaknesses like their scrum, as we've talked about. There's things that you can definitely work against. But these guys will run the pants off you. They just love running with the ball. But honestly, I think we have a side that can match that. And if they can maintain the level that they had, you know, it should be another good day out.
It's got to be, from a defending point of view, Ireland will have to be in their faces right from the minute Jerome Garces blows that first whistle, which didn't happen last week, and we saw what happened with New Zealand getting a try after, what, 3 or 4 minutes of the game.
And it happened.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That cannot afford to happen this week.
No, and whatever happened psychologically, because I know Andy Farrell, you know, that's the way his defence is. You get up in his face, and he'll want to get back at Australia. There's no doubt about that, because they effectively ended his England career, you could say. You could argue that point. And he will very definitely want to get back in a winning way with these guys. But the Irish defence is, it's very aggressive and very committed, which is a great thing. You know, against New Zealand, you know, whenever things did slip by, the scramble defence was excellent. And that's something that we're going to have to see. Unfortunately, like, there's so much to go over this again. But you know what? Ireland, hard enough as it is on them, they have to do it again. They have to do what they've done twice against New Zealand, second half against Canada, if you count that in. They're going to have to do it again, because this Australian team does have the ability to score tries. And regardless of anything else, however good we've been leaking tries.
Can Ireland do it, or do you expect them to do it?
Oh, yeah, I think Ireland can do it. There's no, absolutely zero doubt in my mind of that. Can, I would, Jamie, there is, he mentioned there is a slight little niggle and doubt about the, you know, has it taken a lot out of them? I think physically we've shown we're right up there with any of them fitness-wise. But it's the input of the young guys. It's the keeping of the ring roses in the centre. It's that amazing bench and the Van der Flyers with the impossibly large engine. It's the influence that they're going to have on the game, this 85-minute plan. And, yeah, I think we can do it. I really do. And Sean O'Brien, that back row we have is going to have one hell of a job against Hooper, Pocock and the lads. But, you know, if they keep going anywhere near where they were, we can do it again.
OK, it's rather exciting then, isn't it? That's Shane Byrne there. Well, that's on Saturday afternoon at the Aviva Stadium. But before we finish up, we're going to have a bit of a memory jogger now and go back to a wonderful night in Eden Park during Rugby World Cup 2011 when these sides met.
And O'Connor with a straightforward enough looking opportunity comes up and hits this one and belts it between the posts. The touch judges raise their flags. Australia go into the lead by 3 points to nil. And Johnny Sexton now with his second kick at goal across on the far side of the pitch. It's about 17 or 18 metres in from the touchline, across on that far side, literally on the 22-metre line. And Australia lead by that James O'Connor penalty, 3 points to nil. Sexton now, standing to attention, just outside the 22. If Butch Harmon was here, he'd probably tell him, follow through. Easy for Butch Harmon, not so easy for Sexton in the pressurised cooker that is this place. Sexton comes up with the penalty, drills this one towards the post. He didn't hit it well, but I tell you what, he's after hitting it well enough because it's gone through the post. It almost hit the window of the media centre away to our left-hand side. Sexton with the penalty for Ireland, 3 points apiece. Available now on the near side of the pitch towards Keane Healy. Gets around James O'Connor. Well inside the 22. 5 metres in from the touchline. 3 points apiece as Redden moves it back towards Paul O'Connell. Gets it around Radiki Samo from Nandi and Fiji, but all of a sudden he can play for Australia. He's broad play now. 12 metres short of the line. 7 metres in from the touchline. On the near side of the pitch now, Stephen Ferris comes forward with the ball for Ireland now. Stephen Ferris acting as a temporary scrum half there. Lets it for Sean O'Brien. Sean O'Brien comes forward with it now. Sean O'Brien for Ireland. 15 metres in the referee. Referee's whistle has gone, penalty for Ireland against Australia. Back there now, back towards Sexton, the attempted drop goal. Slots it straight between the posts. Ireland into the lead. Australia have no answer. 18 minutes gone. Ireland leading by 6 points to three.
Great piece of play. Just build pressure after pressure. You can see the Australian defenders are getting tired, fatigued. System errors are coming in, individual errors are coming. It was great to see. They just kept their patience, played with great width, and they actually attack those soft shoulders. Brilliant.
So the penalty now for Australia, and James O'Connor from outside the 22-metre line has a look at the post. Certainly a very confident young man in the press conference the other day. I'm not so sure he's looking massively confident now, though, as he stands over that ball well outside the 22. And here comes O'Connor now with the penalty for Australia. Kicks this one and slots it straight between the posts. That's probably a nervy enough old-looking kick from his point of view, but certainly a very successful one.
Yeah, he got it over. Look, he's a talented boy. He's got it all, really. He's the Aussie superstar at the moment. But he's been made to look pretty average on a couple of occasions tonight. So it's hopefully it keeps coming from an Irish point of view. They keep putting a bit of heat on him.
Redden with the ball for Ireland towards Sexton. Pops it up for O'Driscoll, leaves it inside there now towards Ferris. Ferris breaks through the cover, trying to bring play towards the 22. Redden on a bit of a sniping run, runs into the cover. Rocky Elsom is there. He's blasted out of the way and it's available here. There's an Australian, surely. Harwell in, half a mile offside on the near side of the pitch. The referee playing an advantage. Here comes Paul O'Connell. Paul O'Connell looks to take control of the ball for Ireland. There's a scrum cap on the ground. Referee has blown the whistle and it's a penalty for Ireland. James Harwell came in from the side. Penalty for Ireland midway between the Australian 22 and the 10-metre line. 15 in from the touchline, across on the far side. And a chance here for Johnny Sexton and Ireland. The rain is gone, but I'll tell you what, we'll play in snow if it comes to it. Sexton with the penalty for Ireland, across on the far side of the pitch. As he stands to attention, has one long lingering look at the post. As he comes up, hits this one, nudges it towards the post, has hit the post, it's going to drop down. O'Driscoll is underneath it, and the ball has bounced over his head. It's available here as Australia didn't react, Ireland did. Australia pile inside, and there's a chance now as they could go on the counter-attack. Australia will be hoping now the penalty has been given against Kepu. Has been patted on the back by the referee. Again, really solid work by Ireland, front row. But I'll tell you what, you know, Ireland are making chances for themselves, but Kurt, to be perfectly honest about it, Ireland have got to take those chances.
Must take them. You've got to take them. They handed you on a plate like that.
Ronan O'Gara.
I see O'Gara's taken over the kicking there. The old head's come in and must get our points, must get back, get the receipt right and play Aussie down in their own part of the pitch.
So the penalty for Ireland now. It's closer to the 10-metre line than it is to the 22. 28 metres in for the touchline across on the far side. Ronan O'Gara with the penalty for Ireland. And an opportunity to double the score at Eden Park as O'Gara comes up, launches this one towards the post. Eden Park in Auckland might as well be the Aviva Stadium. It's gone straight between the posts. Ireland lead by 12 points to 6.
That Eden Park nightmare is coming back to haunt the Aussies. They're not in black jerseys, they're in green though.
And the scrum now for Australia, 5 metres short of their own line. 11 minutes remaining. are they putting them under pressure? The referee's whistle has gone. Penalty for Ireland. Conor Murray tried to take it pretty quickly. Penalty for Ireland. Forget about you taking it quickly. Lash the living, the ball between the posts. 6 points between the teams. Ireland 12, Australia 6, penalty for Ireland.
Again, Deshaun and superiority, and the Irish pack are smacking each other on the back, and rightly so. That's also going to have a psychological effect on the Australian pack. They've got them in their pockets, like I said before. And O'Gara, I mean, you want to put the hoodoo on him.
Don't even say it. He's just slapping me elbow if you even mention it. O'Gara up on his feet. 6 points between the teams. O'Gara with the penalty for Ireland now inside the 22-metre line, slightly to the right-hand side of the post, and O'Gara comes up with the kick, hits it, it's gone straight between the posts. It's a two-score game of rugby football, but it's the boys of Ireland who lead the men of Australia by 15 points to 6 at a sudden Eden Park. We're in injury time at the end of the game. Ireland leading by 15 points to 6. Here comes Kirtley Beale, carries it over the halfway line towards the 10-metre line on the near side, 6 metres in for the touchline. Back there now, and the ball is taken by Scott Higginbottom. Higginbottom now charges at Ireland. The referee's whistle has gone. It's a penalty for Ireland on their own 10-metre line. The Irish players collapse onto the ground. The penalty will have to be taken. Ball is taken by Jamie Haslip. He's gathered it. He's kicked it into touch with the referee, which the believer said he's kicked it from their out position. It's a penalty for Ireland from the 10-metre line. Here comes Brian O'Driscoll, the captain, who gathers the ball, kicks it into touch. The game is all over. Ireland have beaten the Tri-Nations champions. They're the Australians, the fellas who wouldn't give you respect during the course of the week, and that's all Ireland wanted. That's all they deserved, and what they wanted was respect from Australia, and all they got was smugness and arrogant stuff coming from Australia and their players during the course of the week. People ask me, had Ireland a big performance in them? Kurt McQuilkin, that's big, isn't it?
That's huge, that's massive, and everyone, every 22 of them to a man, have performed so well today. It's just great to be here on a momentous occasion like this. Now they've got to sit up, they've got to respect Ireland, they've got to respect what the Northern Hemisphere have brought to this tournament.
I was told to get respect, you had to earn it. Ireland have earned respect at Eden Park, the place has gone mad, I'll tell you that. And Ireland now take control of this pool, and they all thought about Australia. I spoke to a fella during the course of the week who was talking about going home and coming back for the quarterfinals. I tell you what, mate, you might want to change your flight, because it's Ireland who are in charge of this group. They have beaten Australia, and I can't remember the stats, a hell of a long time ago, 1979, as Paddy Riley and the fields of Athenry ring out in the rain at Eden Park. Australia are gobsmacked, they're shell-shocked. It's Ireland who've beaten them here at Eden Park by 15 points to 6.
Some great memories there from the 17th of September 2011, when Ireland surprised the rugby world by beating Australia at the Rugby World Cup in Eden Park. Don't forget, you can catch this weekend's game, Ireland against Australia, live on RTE Radio 1. It's also on RTE 2 television, and you can also follow it online. And on Sunday, the Ireland women's team play New Zealand in New CD. Kickoff there is at 2 o'clock. Follow the game. Updates on Sunday Sport. From myself, Michael Corcoran, and producer Andrew O'Connor, thanks for listening, and see you next week.